Welcome back, everybody, to Hoops HD, our continuing preseason coverage for the 2021-22 college basketball season. This is our Big East preview show. Just for sake of clarity here, or for sake of your information, we are recording on the evening of October 18th in case any big news happens between then and when you watch this. But I'm your host, Chad Sherwood, joined on my sides up top here by David Griggs and John Tytel. Directly below me is Joby Fortson, his sides, Rocco Miller from Bracketeer.org, and Matt Zukowski in as well for our Big East show. And we've got a pretty interesting conference this year, I think. And Tytel, I want to start with you because I don't know that any of us, at the end of the show, when we give our picks on who we're going to win, is going to win this conference, I'd be shocked if anybody doesn't pick Villanova to win it, but maybe somebody might, but this is a legitimate team, though, is it not?
I will be disappointed if anybody does not pick the Villanova Wildcats. So they started 16-4 last year. Then their star point guard, Colin Gillespie, got hurt, and that changed everything. Lost to Providence and Georgetown by a combined 3 points. Did win their first two tourney games. They led Baylor at halftime without Gillespie. They ended up losing by 11. They did lose Jeremiah Robinson Earl to the draft. They bring back almost everybody else, including hopefully a healthy Gillespie, because he was the conference co-player of the year despite that injury. Jermaine Samuels, Caleb Daniels, Justin Moore, you name it. They got Coach Jay Wright. He's got two titles under his belt. Now he's got a Hall of Fame plaque on his mantle. I see no reason why this team shouldn't win, except the schedule is going to be very tough. They start out at UCLA. Then they get Tennessee and either Carolina or Purdue. Then a huge game against Penn on December 1st. Syracuse a week later at Baylor mid-December. Schedule's brutal, frankly. But if they can survive that, they're going to be battle-ready for the Big East.
Battle-ready for the Big East. Rocco, battle-ready beyond the Big East, though. I mean, how good nationally is this Villanova team?
Yeah, I that's a really good question. I'm trying to figure that out because there are some question marks. Like, we don't know for sure that Colin Gillespie is fully recovered. We won't know until he's playing full speed. Obviously, if he's there, it's a huge element and piece. But the other thing about this Villanova team that I'm questioning is, with those other great Villanova championship teams or even number one, number two seeds, top 10 level, they had guaranteed NBA level talent. Really, I look at the team. I don't know for sure that any of these guys are for sure NBA players. Brian Antoine's the one that was hyped and recruited, but he hasn't lived up to expectations. He needs to take a big jump forward. Again,
is he suffering from injury as well?
He's supposed to be, yeah. Okay. So we'll see, though. We don't know if he's 100% either, much like Gillespie. And I think that's my big question. We are talking about splitting hairs. We're talking about the elite of the elite in college basketball, or are they just really, really good and the best team in the Big East, which I think they are. They're somewhere in there, and that's where I'm trying to put them. They could be as high as second or third, or maybe down closer to 10th. All right.
Beyond Villanova, Joby, it's tough in this conference when you look below them, because I think there's a big drop off after, at least on paper, after Nova. Maybe we start with UConn next, though.
I agree. UConn is a tournament team. I don't think there's much debate. We get to some of the other teams in the Big East. It's a question, but I don't think there's a question for UConn. UConn proved last year that they were quote unquote back. Hurley's done a very good job. I mean, by back, they're not at Calhoun National Championship standards yet, but who knows? Hurley is building something. The key for UConn will be, can they finally avoid the injury bug? I mean, just when it looked like that they were getting it together last year after the prior book night injuries and Acock, having trouble coming, Acock coming back from his injuries. Then all of a sudden, RJ Cole, who was probably the second best player on the team to book night, goes down. And it's like, oh my gosh. I mean, you're just pulling your hair out if you're a UConn fan in that particular case. If they stay healthy, this is a nice, solid team that's going to play really good defense, fine scoring. They have RJ Cole back. I love Isaiah Whaley. I think he is a very underrated performer on the inside. And then Sonogo is really has a shot, I think, at getting into the discussion for the first team all Big East. Maybe it's a lack of, a lack of depth at the post positions in the Big East. But I think he's going to thrive in this conference that typically plays on the outside, not the inside, over the last few years.
Well, Matt, let me also ask you about this UConn team. This, I mean, really, if you look at the roster, everyone but other than Bouknight gets back, and they hopefully are going to stay healthy. Do you think there's a chance they can even challenge Villanova if Nova slips up a bit?
Yeah, I think if Nova had an injury or two and that, I think UConn could be worth them. They'll probably be 2-3 games back. But actually, I think as much as Nova is a clear number one, I think UConn's a clear number two. And yeah, like so they bring everyone but Bouknight back. Also have a very nice recruiting class, a couple of top 50 guards and wings, Rasul Diggins and Jim Hawkins, who at positions they need him to be because they need to replace Bouknight's scoring. So I think if one of those two could be a good scorer right off the bat, be a threat from three. You got Cole, you got Sanogo, you got another kid I really like, versatile of 3-4, Tyrese Martin.
Yeah, Rhode Island. I didn't mention Martin. That's an excellent point, Matt. I think Martin could really increase his points per game by a good 4 to 5 this year if things go right.
As long as, like, if they're respectable enough from three, they'll have the advantage inside most nights, either Big East or outside of the Big East. And I think I like the number 24 in the AP poll, and I think a good spot for them to start, but they might be able to climb a little bit from that, especially come Big East play when their record could jump a little.
Yeah, it's been a while since UConn's been as good as it looks like they're going to be this year. It's been at least 5 years since they had a 20-game season. Now, I know last year was a unique situation. They played fewer games, but still. And I agree with that. I think that with the talent they have coming back, if they can stay healthy, they can be NCAA tournament good, top 25 good, and make more noise than they've made in a while. One of the things that could really work against them, and I would not be doing my job if I weren't saying this, especially with Lee Delvecchio watching, is when you look at what the football team is doing right now, will the selection committee hold that against them in March?
Hey.
They just beat Yale, who is a tournament level team out of the
Okay. We also got to talk about the Holy Cross loss though, but, David, actually, I want to stick with you about another team that does have a lot of players coming back. I'm seeing the people in the polls liking this team as an NCAA tournament team, despite Travis Steele so far not having been the coach that we've seen at Xavier in the from his past coaches, at least. But what about Xavier? Is this team going to turn the corner and start becoming that perennial NCAA tournament team again?
I know our friend John Stalica hopes so. Mm-hmm. The big question, the big answer to your question is going to be kind of a cop out, but it is honest. I really don't know. I really thought a lot of them last year, especially getting in the Big East play. I thought I was kind of surprised how they've declined. Xavier for the past few years seems to be like a team that really shows us something big early in November and December, and then just tapers off after that as they get in the conference play for various reasons. So even if they get out of the gate and win some big games and do some big things early in the season, can they see it through all the way to the end? And this is another team. It's been a minute since they've had a 20 win season.
Well, Rocco, do you where are you on the Xavier team? Do you agree with David? Are you higher on them? Are you lower on them? Are we just with like me? And it's just who knows?
I'm with Chad. Who knows?
Yeah, I think I'm closer to with David than anything. I mean, it's really hard to make a call that they're going to be a tournament team. I mean, you have to love, you know, Scruggs and Fremantle, just great basketball players. But the team dynamic and the fit, it's a lot of the same guys, right? Nungy's kind of the key transfer they got from Iowa, and that's going to help the defense a little bit. But, you know, I don't know how many minutes they'll get out of him. And I think it does look a lot like last year for the most part. And so with that being said, I love the way David summed it up. We've seen the hot starts, but when things get tough in February, even go back to the first COVID year where we didn't get a tournament, but we basically got the whole season, you know, they totally fell apart and right on the bubble that year. So that's left a sour taste in, I think, most of our mouths. And it's going to be really, you know, they got to prove it to us before we want to predict it kind of feel.
Well, Titel, we had another Sweet 16 team from the Big East last year besides Nova, and that was Creighton. Well, what about the Blue Jays heading into this season?
I am not buying Creighton one bit. They just lost way too much because they had a senior-heavy team last year. Greg McDermott survived to coach another season. The schedule is doable. They have horrible teams like ASU on their schedule, but I just don't see Creighton doing anything this year, and feel free to prove me wrong, anybody.
Chad, you mentioned, you know, how, or David mentioned how Xavier will sometimes tail off at the end of the season. That was the famous thing that Creighton did for years, getting out there. Don't worry, that's not going to happen this year because they will tail off from day one.
They're going to tail from day one. Matt, I want to ask you about a team that I kind of like heading into this season, and that's what Mike Anderson has at St. John's.
Oh, yeah, no, I'm with you. I like they got Tasha Alexander back. More importantly, Julian Champagne's back. Those two, Champagne's best. He might be the best player not named Colin Gillespie returning to the conference. And that you got the big transfer from Fordham, Joel Soriano, to help them out on the inside, where that was a lot of times where you could exploit St. John's. And that's those three, I think, key parts to where. Again, if they could just hit some shots from three, they got Steph Smith, the Vermont transfer. Basically, if he could be the perimeter threat for them and score in the half court where they're not turning teams over on the press, I think they could be a top five tournament team this year, Big East.
Top five in the conference. Big East. At the conference. Yeah, top five. Okay. I thought, if you're going to top five nationals at St. John's, we're going to have a whole other discussion here.
I was going to say, I'm not Mike Anderson's long lost son, but.
David, yeah, are you with me and Matt on the St. John's bandwagon?
I am. I think the Johnnies have a lot this year. They're one of the teams I think are going to be closer to the top of the conference than the bottom. Not quite top 25 good, but I could see them in the NCAA tournament. Yeah. I kind of like them.
Well, beyond these teams we've discussed so far, Rocco, do you want to go? Do we go Seton Hall next? Are they the next team up to discuss here?
Yeah, I would. I actually have Seton Hall third in the league personally. Okay. I think one of the things that I like about the makeup of this team is, you know, you've got a 7-2 center in Ike Obiaju, and Jared Roden, he's a 15 point per game guy. He might actually go up without Mamu in the way. Miles Kale is a solid, experienced senior. And then I think the real key that everybody's got the buzz about is Kadari Richmond coming over from Syracuse. You know, from a talent development standpoint, he's making that freshman to sophomore jump. He's already proven he can do it at a power six level. It's a really good fit, I think, as well for, you know, the way Seton Hall likes to play. And you look at they're probably going to have an 8-man rotation that includes 6 seniors. 5 of those are COVID year seniors. So in general, it's an old team, probably a well-coached team. Kevin Willard's got a great reputation coaching-wise. I think this is a team that looks like a tournament team to me, and they just kept creeping up my board the more and more I look at them.
Titel, I don't know that I've heard anybody before today pick Seton Hall as high as third in the conference. Are you with Rocco, though?
I mean, I've hated Bryce Aiken since he was at Harvard and destroying Penn year after year. I do love teams with seniors, and if there's one thing this team has, it's seniors. The schedule looks pretty brutal. Michigan, Ohio State, either Cal or Florida, Texas, and then some team named Rutgers. So I don't know what they're going to do with that schedule.
Yeah. Joby, how about Butler?
How about them?
Did you like anything on there or not really?
The question, they fell off. My joke about Creighton, you know, was essentially Creighton's going to look like Butler did last year, so to speak. Butler has to improve. They actually are returning their entire starting lineup, though. And this is one of the only ones that we're going to come across. Their entire starting lineup is back and average double figures. And that's pretty amazing. That and a cup of coffee with bad defense will get you sixth in the conference, and that's where they're going to be. But
you like them that much?
I think this could be a surprise team. I mean, just because of that return factor.
I mean, you've got four senior starters. I will say that. That is extremely impressive.
I got it. I agree with you, Joby. They can score, but my God, they couldn't stop. They are just atrocious on defense. They're they're supposed to be guarding which end of the floor.
Loyola Marymount made the Sweet 16 without playing a single minute, a second of defense in 1990. Okay, go ahead.
Yeah.
I don't think Bill Kibble's walking through that door to Indianapolis.
Yeah.
The problem from last year's standpoint on the defense, too, is I think it's endemic to the program of how they've structured themselves now. I don't think it's going to dramatically improve. And so they'll be in better position because for goodness sakes, like I said, there's four seniors there. You would think they'd know where to be, but I don't know if there's a desire. What was the old joke is good news. You're returning everybody. Bad news. You're returning everybody. Yeah. And I don't know how much they care on that end of the court. They'll be better because they can't be much worse, but whereas their net was like probably low 200s, high 100s last year.
Good.
Good for them. It'll be in the low 100s this year. Okay. How about that?
Tytel, they're in your backyard. They are the defending Big East tournament champions. They stole a bid last year. The Georgetown Hoyas and Patrick Ewing, not going to be quite as good this year as last, is it?
I mean, no, but nobody thought they'd be good last year, and somehow they won the freaking Big East tournament. Like, anything's possible. The sad news coming out of Georgetown this week was the fact that it happened so suddenly. So on Thursday of last week, I saw a report about Trey King, the Eastern Kentucky transfer, that, quote, he's probably going to play the four or five this year with a lot of minutes. And then the very next day from the athletic department, quote, he didn't meet the conduct expectations of the university. He will not be on the men's basketball team. So it literally changed in an instant. Not that he was going to make the difference between a good team and a great team, but yeah, the cupboard's just more bare. Kudus Wahab gone. Jamarco Pickett gone. Javon Blair gone. Like, there's just not enough pieces there. There weren't last year and somehow they did it, but there's just not, they can't do it this year.
I tell. Come on.
There's a Mutombo. Yes, I know.
It's there.
Georgetown wasn't good last year. They had a fantastic week when they needed to.
David, it's a team that I always seem to ignore every season. I think I'm ignoring them this season. Am I right to be ignoring Providence this year, or should I be paying attention to them?
Pay attention to them. I think that they're better than crap. I don't know if I would – if you gave me $1,000, if I guessed whether or not they'd make the NCAA tournament, my guess would be no. But this is a Providence team that is – Ed Cooley, they've always been fun to watch. They seem like they've always exceed expectations and have moments where they're better than what you thought they'd be, at least in my case. And with what they have and the pieces they have, it wouldn't shock me if they went on some runs and won some big games and maybe got themselves into the discussion. So am I – guaranteeing they'll get there or predicting they'll get there? No, but are they good enough to where you need to pay attention to them? I think so.
You agree with that, Rocco?
Yeah, I do, okay. Actually. And I just want to take you back for a second, back to the end of the first COVID year, 2020. You know, we got cut off, but the two hottest teams in the country were clearly Providence and UCLA.
They were.
And I talked to some people at Providence in the last couple of weeks, and I think Ed Cooley really needs that full season for things to come together, especially defensively. He's had a top 40 defense each of the last 7 years until last year. They dropped to 75. I think some of the COVID pause and issues with that, it obviously affected everybody, but I think it affected the way they like to manage for their whole season. And I think offensively, he runs that complex flex system. There's not a lot of spacing. They screw around until it's the end of the shot clock. I don't think any of that's going to necessarily get fixed. But I do think by adding in A.J. Durham and Justin Manaya, two veteran, very much older, mature, experienced players to go along with, a couple of really key guys led by Nate Watson, who's probably all Big East. I think there's enough there to get the defense fixed. You got a system that's proven. Why not get in the tournament with this team?
Matt, we have two new head coaches in the Big East this year. One of them at your school, Marquette. Shaka Smart coming over, quit Texas because it wasn't good enough for him, came to Marquette, correct?
Well, first of all, that's a story I'd like to say. I think realistically, it was our career moves. It's something actually many coaches should do of, hey, get out a year early instead of staying and you're there a year too late. But no, I think, actually, I think it's a better fit for him. And it sounds like he's not going to totally go back to the VCU Havoc style, but more closer to the style, be a lot closer to what VCU played like under him. That is Texas style, where other than last year, they were plotting half court. They upped the tempo last year at Texas, and I think it's going to continue. They're going to, if nothing else, Marquette might lead the Big East in tempo, or at least be right there with St. John's. Not, now, don't be there with wins, but yeah, should be a lot more fun to watch this year, and could be a pretty decent defensive team. We got the Big Ten Defensive Player of the Year, Daryl Morsell. One of the better defenders in the Big 12, Kirk Wath, at the five. So, no, I think Marquette's not going to be a lot of fun to play against. It's just, I fear, scoring droughts and fast tempo, but it might be 50 points in 75 possessions, and you give up 73.
So it's not a good
defense, but yeah.
Not a good outlook for a sub-500 team that finished in ninth place has no starters returning. You don't like their tournament chances, even though they're your school.
No, probably not, but at the same time, the antithesis of Butler, I was happy to see most of them leave.
Okay, that's a good map. This addition by subtraction there. David, one of the team we got to discuss, and one of your favorites of all time, also with a new head coach, how about the Blue Demons?
Well, at the end of the day, I've been doing a lot of research on this, and see if you can, if you agree with this. The problem is they're still DePaul.
but serious though, Tytel, what about Tony Stubblefield? Does he have any realistic shot at turning things around here in this, I guess they're technically a Big East school?
No, but I'll ruin my final thought since you talked about him to ask me about him. So He's coached for under three different coaches in the past 20 years. Lou Henson, New Mexico State, Mick Cronin, Cincinnati, Dana Altman, Oregon. If you cannot learn how to be a good coach when learning from those three, then you cannot learn how to be a good coach. So sadly, you still need talent and he's lacking that. But I believe in him because of the training he's had for the last two straight decades.
DePaul, and I say this every year on this show, it doesn't make any sense that they're not better. They're in a basketball-rich part of the country in terms of high school basketball. It seems like they should be able to recruit Big East talent with a bicycle. Like, you don't even need to go anywhere. They have a lot of centrally located alumni that are loyal to the institution, so a fan base wouldn't be a problem. Why can't DePaul put together a team that's regularly good enough to win the Missouri Valley? They can't.
They're getting recruited in their hometown by Loyola Chicago, UIC, Chicago
State. They are. And, yeah.
maybe
not Chicago State or UIC, but like, you know, Valley teams seem to recruit Chicago better than DePaul does.
Well, yeah, if I could jump in for a second, I'll tell you this. I think with Stubbs coming in, he's coming from Oregon. And, you know, without getting in the weeds too much, he's going to get players. I mean, he was the guy for Oregon, bringing in tons of five stars. That's a big reason why DePaul brought him in. Now, I think Tytel asked the million-dollar question, is he a good coach? We have no idea. But you'd hope he would have learned under those guys. But I'll tell you what, within 3 years or less, you're going to see a lot of talent at DePaul. It's just going to be a matter of can they coach him up, or are they just going to remain at the bottom?
Yeah.
My question I want to run through each of you now, a couple of things I want to run through each of you. I want to ask each of you who your pick to win the Big East is. It should be Villanova. How many teams the Big East is going to get in the NCAA tournament? And also, any other final thoughts you may have on the Big East? Let's kind of hit all three of those topics at once. And Rocco, why don't I just start with you? You're on my screen.
All right. Let's go with five bids. I think Villanova is clearly the favorite, so I'll pencil them in as the champ. I've got UConn and Seton Hall, clearly in their own tier for me. I do have St. John's in as well. I think they've got enough there, and I'm drinking enough of the Kool-Aid, but I do look at it from the other lens and can see it not working out. So it's not as big of a you know, confident level there. And then a squirrely, I should change my answer. It's actually not 5, it's 4.5, and it's tentative. I do have Providence penciled in as a play-in team, just based on Ed Cooley's track record and the makeup of that team. Like I said, I think my bigger surprises is that I have Xavier and the Butler team. I guess everybody's on the same page with, but some people do have them in. So I have Xavier and Butler just missed out.
Okay. Any other thoughts on the Big East?
Yeah, in general, I think much like the ACC outside of Villanova, there's a lot of mush in the middle. I count out DePaul and Georgetown as zero real chance to contend for a bid. But I do think even all the way down to Marquette, you got some upside there that if things break right and things come together, you know, even to Creighton, yeah, very much rebuilding, but they have a proven coach. They have they probably have the best home court advantage in the league. Look how far everybody has to travel to play them. They're going to get some good wins. And hey, if they figure things out a little bit faster than everybody expects, they could be in the mix for a bid. So, I think two through nine, all those teams, could slot into those 3, 4, 5 spots, give or take. I do think UConn's kind of for sure number two at this point, but a lot can change quickly with all these seniors.
Matt, how about you?
Yes, actually, same number. I got 5, Villanova winning, 5 bids. You got Nova, UConn, Seton Hall, St. John's, and Xavier. I think I'm not a huge Travis Steele fan, but man, like getting Paul Scruggs back for the COVID year, that's and Fremantle. And I think Dwan Odom's going to take a big step up in year two. Especially if we can develop an outside shop. And yeah, 5 bids. And Providence reasonably close. I like what they've done, but I need to put away. If AJ Reeves becomes the kid they thought they recruited when he's a top 50 guy, then yeah, that's a 6 maybe, but I'll say they just missed for the NIT. And I think it's a good league this year. I think somewhere 4-6 range nationally. Nova, the only team probably realistically that can win a title. You could maybe with the right break get to the Final Four, but probably more second round Sweet 16 realistically. And that, but I think, yeah, talking about it, it's sound this year, but man, I think it's a good time to bring in a new coach. And that I think there is a void after Nova and UConn to where someone like Shocking gets it going to Marquette in that. It wouldn't be that long. I could see him having Marquette up in the top 3 or 4. And then hopefully down the road challenging through the top, but first step is get to the top 3 or 4, which I think is realistic in a couple of years.
All right. Joby, what about you?
I actually like Matt's comment on AJ Reeves being a wild card on, you know, if he steps up to that level of what he was recruited, I agree. All of a sudden Providence adds to the list. Unfortunately, my list is 3. The fact is, where are the bids that, because I think the SEC is going to have a lot. I think the Big Ten is going to have a lot. As you heard on the other podcast, I think the ACC will have a lot, even if they're not a power. And I look at it, let's take the ACC. Do you like a Virginia Tech more than you like, one of these middling teams like a Providence? Yeah, I like Virginia Tech a lot more, in that particular case. And so I think the Big East is going to stub its toe out of conference a lot, but Villanova's a 1 seed. That's why they're my pick. To win it all, Villanova could go undefeated this year if everybody stays healthy this time around, undefeated in the Big East. And if they're not too beat up. The one comment I'll say is kind of spins off that. I think the Big East, at least this year, I don't know if it's long-term, but at least this year is starting to feel the impact that they had of not being a Power 5 football conference. And let me explain. They don't have some of the same side dollars that come in from football for recruiting purposes, for facility purposes, and especially given the COVID year, I feel like having that infrastructure, that base infrastructure that an SEC school can provide helped a lot. Whereas a lot of these private school, Big East schools don't have that foundation. We will see if it's a permanent shift, because it very well may, be a permanent shift, given everything that's going on the football side. But I'm certainly willing to wait it out, because the Big East is such a fun conference. I hope that they do maintain themselves as a Power 6 when it comes to basketball.
You know what, Joby? I really like your pick here. I'm going with four myself, but I only see three that I think are really in, which are Nova, UConn, St. John's. I think the Xavier, Butler, Seton Hall, Providence crew gives us a fourth, but maybe like a first four team. But I agree. I think this is a down year for the Big East. I think this is a year when you may get those questions of, is this really a power league, especially if Nova stubs their toe a few times and is suddenly looking like, you know, that they're maybe a six or seven seed hanging to the NCAA tournament instead of what, where I think, you know, where they are now, which is probably a protected seed, a high protected seed. But I do like your thoughts on the Big East there. But Tytel, what about you?
I think Villanova wins handily. Joining them in the tournament are Connecticut. I like Seton Hall. As far as Xavier, St. John's, Butler, Providence, I think one of them will make it. I'm not sure if two of them will, so I'll take an over-under 4.5, and I'll take the under. As far as a non-coach Stubblefield fun fact, if you like nicknames, then Xavier is your team. The top three in order, number three, Paul Scruggs, a.k.a. Scrizzle. Number two, Nate Johnson, a.k.a. Turtle Man. And my favorite, and number one overall, Zach Fremantle, a.k.a. Big Frosty.
I don't know. I think I got to go with Turtle Man over Big Frosty.
Big Frosty.
Come on, like Turtle Man. David, you want to finish this out here?
Yeah, I was I was going to go with four and figured that would be the low number the way it was going. But, yeah, I was thinking – I was having trouble finding a fourth. I think Nova is top 10 good. I think UConn is NCAA tournament good. And I think the Johnnies get inside the bubble. And maybe one other team makes it. I'm not as big on the league. Another thought that I have is that I wonder, and I know I've said this before, when conferences decided to go to a 20 game format, is 18 less out of conference games and resulting in 14 or 15 less out of conference wins. How does that impact the matrix or the computer rankings of this league? Is it able to distance itself? Because there were years where this league and the Big 12 doing the double round robin with, you know, the 18 game format really pushed it forward. We routinely saw 6 and 7 teams in the NCAA tournament. Does that prevent them from getting the metrics that they need to push the league forward in the double round robin? I know it's still a double round robin, but with potentially 18 fewer wins.
Of course, they added the second best team in the league to make force them to go to the 20 being still around robin, which is very interesting.
Yeah.
Yeah. But you're also now playing two games each against Georgetown, two games each against DePaul. You know, there's some garbage you have to play in conference, and there's going to be less chances this year, I think,
yeah,
to pick up a top 25, a top 30 win. It's going to be, we've got to be Villanova at home to make our tournament case. And that right, may not be a win you can pick up. But I guess on that note, I do want to take the chance here to thank everybody for joining us here for our Big East preview. We will be posting many more previews. If you look up on the season preview tab up there, you get all of our videos. We've got, as of the time we're recording this, the ACC and the Big East done so far. We'll be adding the Big Ten, the Pac-12 later this week, and more as we move on. We also have the list of exhibition games up there, so check that out. And check out everything else on the site. Lots of interviews, everything. But on behalf of Joby Fortson, Rocco Miller from Bracketeer.org, and Matt Sikowski in the bottom row, John Tytel and David Griggs up here, I'm Chad Sherwood. Thanks for joining us, and we'll talk to you again real soon.